Good morning, everybody. How are you all doing? You all okay? I will explain the tables in just a moment. It's something for you to look forward to pretty soon. So this morning, where the talk is looking at Luke 22 and Luke 23. Actually, would you be able to lower this just a little bit for me? If I did it, I'd like drop it and everything would go everywhere. And the passage that we're going to look at, it starts with a big celebration. We're there in Jerusalem, back when the last few days of Jesus' life, but there we are celebrating the Passover with all the Jewish people, and what an amazing time it is in Jerusalem then. And the Passover celebration is a massive deal to all Jews, and it still is. It's a huge celebration for them of celebrating when they left Egypt on the Exodus, and they got their freedom. They were slaves in Egypt for a very long time, and it was the most dreadful time for them. And on those last few days, when Moses kept on going to to Pharaoh saying, "Please let my people go," and he kept on saying no, and he would go back, "Please let my people go," and he would say no again. And each time he would send another plague, something else that would go wrong. The water turned into blood. He sent frogs, he sent locusts. One day was completely dark, and on that tenth time of going, he said, "Let my people go," and he said no again. And then the Passover happened, where that very night the worst thing happened, where in all of Egypt the firstborn sons of any person, any animal, any livestock they had, they all died on that night. And the only thing that could protect them was the blood of the lamb over the gateposts and on their door frames, was to protect them so that the angel would pass those houses by, and then the judgment would just come on the Egyptians. And what a terrible night that must have been. And Pharaoh ushered the Jews out, "Get out of this land, leave now," and they rushed off. And that is why they celebrate the Passover. And that was all about the first freedom that it was. And in Jerusalem, on this particular Passover time, there was estimated around 2,700,000 pilgrim Jews. That's a lot of people, isn't it? We get excited when you've got Man United playing in the city and all the fans come down. It's like, wow, isn't it amazing? We've got all these people from Manchester coming. So great. But 2,700,000 people in the city. Now, what a celebration it must have been. And it was of huge importance. It was law that they did this every single year. And so I suppose for us, it's similar to as they prepared for the Passover and did everything. It's the same for us with Christmas, isn't it? We get everything ready. We get our turkey. We get our Christmas tree, our Brussels sprouts. Why we eat Brussels sprouts at Christmas, I have no idea, but we do. And we get everything ready for Christmas. And it was the same thing that was happening there in Jerusalem, people preparing, getting ready. Where we're at in the story is really the beginning of those final moments for Jesus. And this is really a time of preparation. And he was preparing his disciples for what was ahead. And this was, as we know, the familiar Last Supper. And during this time, although they were celebrating one feast, he created a new celebration during this time. And that is what we would know as communion. And the first communion was taking place where he took the bread and he broke it and said, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." And the disciples ate that bread. And then he took the wine and he said, "Drink this. This is my blood that is shed for you." And he gave it to them. And they drank it. And this was the first communion on this Passover celebration. And the disciples didn't get it. They were like, "What? This is his blood? This is his body? It's Passover. This is about like us being saved from Egypt. What's going on?" So they didn't quite get it. And then he would talk further, and he was saying about how the first would become last, and he talked about being able to serve. And at the same time, they're going, "Well, who's going to be the greatest? One of us is going to be the greatest. Where are you going to sit at the table?" And, "I think I should sit there." "No, I think I should sit there. I'm better than you." And there's a big argument as Jesus talking about giving his life for them, but they don't get it. Then he talks about serving. They still don't get it. But you know, in a few hours' time, they would, and Jesus knew that, so he didn't explain again. He did what he had to do. He showed them what they could do to remember this time and time again. And it wasn't just a once a year thing. It was an anytime, anywhere type of celebration that they could remember him whenever. So he created a new one to prepare them for the time ahead. But he didn't just prepare his disciples, he prepared himself as well. And after that meal, he took himself up into the Mount of Olives. And I'm just going to read to you a little bit of what happened. He walked away about a stone's throw away and knelt down and prayed, "Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine." Then an angel from heaven appeared and strengthened him. He prayed more fervently, and he was in such agony of spirit that his sweat fell to the ground like great drops of blood. And then he came up and he was refreshed. And you know that what a hard scene for Jesus, knowing what he was going to face. He was preparing himself before God, and he went in fear, in trepidation, knowing that it was going to be a really painful time. And he got down before God and said, "Please, Lord, please, if there's any other way, take it. Take it from me, please." And in the end, after that, he said, "But God, not my will, but yours. I will do it if you want me to. If this is the only way, I am here for you." And he did it. And he stood up, and you know, from this scene of getting down on his knees, of how he was in such despair, an angel came and helped him. He was sweating drops of blood, which is extreme kind of anxiety that they say it's very extreme for that to happen. And it's a close to death kind of scene. That he was there, and God helped him and strengthened him. And as he finished the prayer, he stood up ready for what was to come. He prepared himself for what was ahead for him. And you know, the same can be for us as well. We can be like Jesus when we are faced with those difficult times, of those times where we're faced with things and we're saying, "God, if you can, please, please, can you just take this away from me? This is really hard. I'm in a really hard place right now. If you can, Lord, take it. But you know, if it's your will, I'm willing to be here. I'm willing to take it on. And with your strength and with your help, I will do this." And it says that we can come, in Hebrews 4, it says, "Let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There we'll receive his mercy, and we will find grace to help us when we need it most." And you know, this is really true. Jesus found it in the garden, in the Mount of Olives. He found it there, that when he came and entered and faced God and said, "Lord, just help me in this." He was there and he found grace and he was able to get through that situation. And the same applies for us as well, that he will help us. He might not take the situation away from us. We still might have to face up to whatever's going on, just like Jesus did. But he strengthens us and helps us where we need it so that we can get through it, however painful it might be. And from this point on, I've got to say the story gets a bit worse, and this is where it starts to get a bit painful. So he stands up and he goes forward and he sees his disciples, and they're asleep, and he tells them to wake up, get ready, stay alert. And again, that's the same message, trust for us to stay alert. And then he's faced with Judas. Judas comes and he's betrayed by one of his friends. He comes and he is faced with a kiss. And could you imagine that? That you're betrayed by a friend with a kiss? And Jesus says, "Really? A kiss? You betray me?" And there the Roman guards are with the high priest. And they come and they take him away. And while they're there, they accuse him. And they say things that just aren't true about him. They start putting things on him. They start mixing words up. And they take things... they take things that he'd done the wrong way, and they start putting words in his mouth, and it's a really horrible time. And then when they actually take him, and then he's faced in those courts, and when he's in the high priest's courtyard, they start mocking him. They start tying up, they dress him up, and they start beating him and mocking him. And it's what a horrible time for him to be there with those people, physically beating him. They blindfolded him and started saying, "Tell us, who's hitting you? Prophesy who it is who's hitting you." And there they are, making fun of him and making fun of all that he's done, all the miracles that they've seen, putting it on him. And what a cruel, cruel place to be. And in the middle of that, he sees Peter, one of his best friends, and he denies him. He hears the cockerel crow, and he turns to Peter and looks at him. And Peter is devastated, absolutely devastated. He was one of the only two disciples that actually made it into that courtyard. He was such a close friend to Jesus, yet at this last hurdle, he denied him three times. And Jesus looks at him, and Peter looks at him. What a hard place to be in the middle of all of this. And then after that, the lies begin. That the high priests, and they take him off to Pilate. And in front of Pilate, they start lying. These started riots. He's caused riots. He's been telling people not to pay their taxes to Caesar. And they start picking up on conversations that they'd had previously where they'd already tried to trip Jesus up of saying, well, what do you think? Should people pay taxes or not, Jesus? And Jesus was always able to answer them. He never did anything wrong. He was the perfect person. Yet they brought him before Pilate saying things that were just lies, completely changed their charges to make it stand up because they needed the Romans to get Jesus killed. They couldn't do it on their own. They didn't have the powers to crucify Jesus, but he knew that Pilate did. And off they were in front of Pilate. And they were lied to, and then he was humiliated. As Pilate was just a weak leader, really, he took him off. He didn't want to make the decision himself, so he thought, ah, no, I'll take him to Herod. And there in front of Herod, who had already killed John the Baptist and taken his head off, he was there, humiliated in front of him, dressed up in a purple robe and with a crown of thorns on his head, saying, come on then, show me what you can do. Show me a miracle. Tell me what is it that you can do. And there he is again, humiliated in front of all of these people, all of these officials, Jesus, standing there. What pain that must be. How hard that must be. And you've got the two weak leaders. Herod was like, no, you can deal with it. Sent him back to Pilate. And Pilate, in the end, knew he was innocent. But he became a scapegoat. He was there in front of the crowds. The crowds start cheering. We want Barabbas. Crucify him. We want to free Barabbas. And Barabbas was the one guy who was guilty of the very thing that Jesus was charged of. He did create riots. He did cause a political stir in Jerusalem. But not only that, he was a murderer. Yet Jesus was the one who was being accused of that in all innocence. And there they were shouting for him. Jim, the priest, getting people to cheer. Like, starting this riot, particularly, I would think. What a strange and horrible place to be. And there is Jesus, right in the centre of it, innocent of all of it. And it ends up that he, Barabbas, is freed, and Jesus ends up on the cross. There he is, crucified, because of all of that build-up, because of all of the things that they did, the lies, the mocking, being denied, humiliated, accused, all of those things. And you know, reading that list is particularly hard, and hearing it, I can't imagine, can be that much easier either. And you know, it is a painful thing, and it is a hard thing. And this is what put Jesus on the cross. All of this build-up is what put him there. And that's hard. And I don't know about you, but it makes me angry. I get really angry at this. You're like, how could that happen? I'd be like, no, don't let this happen. I can't believe you've just done that. Make it stop. I don't want to see this happen. This is wrong. It's absolutely wrong. You're lying. It's an absolute lie. Don't be ridiculous. And you know, I'm quite a protective person. If anything was to happen to any of my family or friends, I do get quite protective. I get angry and I think, no, this is absolutely wrong. And you know, And I would say most of us probably would. We hate injustice, don't we? And when we do see injustices happen, it does get us angry. And, you know, it's in a way, it's right to get angry at injustice. Jesus hated injustice. God hates injustice. He's a God of justice, isn't he? And recently in the news, just this week, there's been a story of how old people have been neglected and mistreated in their homes from some carers. And carers have been going into elderly people's houses and not doing the job that they are paid for. They've been pretending to care for the old people. They've been dropping talcum powder on the floor to make it look like they've put it on. They've started wetting the sinks of the bathroom to make it look like they've washed their patients. Yet the old people not being able to do it themselves, haven't been cared for, they haven't been fed, they haven't been washed. And obviously this isn't all carers, but this is something that's been happening and is being done this week. And you know, isn't that terrible? That makes me angry that people would do that to these vulnerable people. And yet it is happening, and we hate injustice. And in the same, Jesus did not deserve this. He was innocent. He was pure. He never sinned. He didn't do any of what they said that he did. He didn't deserve to be beaten. He didn't deserve to be mocked. He didn't deserve to be denied by one of his best friends. That was a horrible place. And you know, looking at it, you think, man, that angers me. But then you look at Jesus and you see what he did. He didn't answer back. He said what he had to say. He was calm and he was in control. But you know, he did that for a purpose. We look at it and we think, oh, this is a mess. This is just terrible. But actually, this was the plan all of the time. He didn't need to answer back. He didn't have to argue or get angry, because this was the plan. This was what was going to save the world. This was the whole reason that he came to earth in the first place, that Jesus, that God sent him down here as a baby, and he grew up doing all of these things. This was the final plan. So he didn't have to say anything. He didn't have to answer all the questions, because he knew it was the plan. If he did, the plan could have gone horribly wrong. He could have got himself out of this situation probably quite easily, but he chose not to. Why? Because he loves us. That is it. He loves us. And we look at all that he went through over this time. Why? Because he loves us, because he loved those people that put him there, who did all of those things as he faced them, as he was on the cross. He loved them. Like, that doesn't stop amazing me. When I read it, when I look at it, when I think about it, how amazing is that, that someone would do that for me, that someone would do that for you? It's incredible, isn't it? And it says that in 1 John 3:16, we know what real love is because Jesus gave up his life for us. Do you know that is true? We know what love is because Jesus showed it to us first. He was the first one to love. We love because he loved first. And do you know, in all of this, he was in control because he loves us. He had to go through this. This was the pain that he needed to go through to show us how loved we are, but also to bring us back into relationship with God, that this was the only way. Someone had to take the punishment. Someone had to go to that cross. It could have been us, or it could have been Jesus. And Jesus said, I'll take it. I'll take the blame. Just as Barabbas was absolutely guilty of what he did wrong, he walked away out into the crowd, and Jesus, the innocent, took the blame for the very thing that Barabbas was guilty of. And in the same way, he does that for us. Now, we might not beat people or anything like that, but we all do things wrong. We all have areas in our life, things in our life that aren't right. But you know, Jesus went to the cross for those things. He said, I love you. And that's why he went, so that we could have a relationship with God. And like Rachel said in the kids' spot, all we have to do is say sorry and say, I believe that you did this for me. And we're there. That is it. We get before God. And he says, yeah, come. I want everyone to be with me. I want everyone found. And this is an amazing thing. But at the same time, it brings a huge challenge to us as well. When we look at Jesus and how he responded and what he did, that can we be like him? Can we forgive like he forgave? When we are faced with similar things, when we are left out, when we are mocked, when our friends abandon us and walk away, when we are on our own, when someone makes fun of us, if we're in school or at work and maybe there's bullying going on, are we able to forgive those people? Are we able to stand up and say, do you know what? However hard this is, however painful this is, I'm going to forgive you. And a few years ago, there was a family in London, and their son got stabbed and killed. And it was big news at the time. And as they were being interviewed, they were saying, "So how have you come? What do you think of the boy who killed your son?" One, an angry response, and they said, "You know, we forgive him. We forgive him." And it just shocked everyone there, like, "What? You forgive him? He killed your son?" And they're like, "Yes, I forgive him. I don't want to carry that bitterness around with me," was their response. And if we don't forgive, we just get bitter. We carry it with us, and that bitterness grows and grows and grows. And to the point where you end up more lonely, you don't trust, and it would be such a hard place to come from. Forgiveness is one of the most freeing things that we can do. And like Jesus on the cross, he had a guy next to him on the cross saying, "Is there still time for me? Can I come to you in paradise?" And Jesus said, "You know what? There's a place set for you right next to me." You know, around that very last step, and I know that the interns are going to talk about a little bit more about that tonight, so it'd be really great for you to come and hear what they've got to say. I know I want to. So it'd be really great. And even at that last point, he forgave the guy next to him. And again, he looked out, and he looked when they were all gambling over his clothes. "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing." He forgave, even on the cross, his last moments. There he is, forgiven. Can we do the same? Can we put that in our lives too? And that for me is a big challenge for us, isn't it? To respond like Jesus responded, to be like him, but also to know just how loved and accepted we all are as well. And it's brilliant that it doesn't end here as well, that, like I said, God was in control, and the truth did come out in the very end, that as his final breath came and he said, "It is finished." In fact, didn't say it. I think he shouted it very, very loudly so everyone heard. And as it finished and as he breathed his last breath, the curtain was torn in two in the temple, and then there was no separation between God and everybody else. What a massive statement that was. But not only that, you had the Roman officer who was stood right at the bottom of the cross saying, "Surely this man was innocent." He could see it. It went dark. Everything changed. The crowd must have been silenced and, "Oh no, what have we done?" What a moment. The truth came out. Jesus didn't need to say anything. This was what he came for. But the truth came. But not only that, 3 days later, he rose again. Jesus is alive. Like, he defeated death. He defeated it all to help us, all so that we could be in relationship, all so that we could know forgiveness in our own lives for the things that we've done wrong. How amazing. And he rose, and now he lives, and he lives with us today, which is a massive thing. It is incredible. And as we look at this journey from a celebration all the way through to the horrible things that happened, through to the cross, to afterwards, you see God in control. He was in control at every step of the way. Even the fact that it happened on Passover, that is no accident. He is in control. And for us today, the same thing applies. When we are faced with difficult things, when we are living our lives, it's to know that God is in control. We just have to come to him, ask him, and at the same time, just like Jesus, forgive in those situations. So I just want to, at the end, just take a moment just to pray and have the time to come before God and just ask him, just like Jesus did. So shall we just pray? Lord, I just thank you for what you did for us. And as we look at what happened, Lord, as we look at the cross, we can't help but be sad about it, of how it all happened, Lord. But you knew it. It was your plan. And Lord, I know for myself personally, I am so, so grateful. And I just want to thank you. I want to thank you for what you did for me. It is an amazing thing. And Lord, we thank you that you did it for us. And Lord, I just thank you that you forgave us. And in the same way, I just pray that we can forgive in the same way that you did. That when people do things against us, that we will forgive. That we won't hold it, but that we will take it to the cross, just like you did. That at the cross, you gave freedom. So I just pray that we will take our things that are done against us, we'll take them and put them at the cross, and that we will choose to forgive in the same way you did. And if there's anyone here who doesn't know Jesus, doesn't have a relationship with Jesus and would like to, I just want to say now is your opportunity. If you would like to have that relationship, to know that Jesus did all of this for every single person. He went through this for us so that we didn't have to. And all we have to do is say sorry, to say yes to Jesus and to follow him. So I'm just going to pray now. And if that's you, then you can pray with me. Lord, I thank you for what you've done for me. I'm sorry for the things that I've done wrong. And I just want to say I live for you from now on, that I leave all of that behind and I turn away from those things. And I just pray that you will help me to live for you. And that Holy Spirit, you will come and that you will fill me to help me to live this life for you. Amen.